Hello, everybody, and welcome to Burning River Radio, a subsidiary of BurningRiverBaseball.com. I'm Joe, and I'm here with my good buddy Mike, and
Hey, what's up?
we'd like to talk to you about the Cleveland Indians.
Well, first of all, how do you spell subsidiary?
I don't know, I just for fun.
Well, it was a very good week for the Indians since last time we spoke with everybody. I mean, they went on a 6-game winning streak, almost came back, tried to come back there on Sunday. It would have been 8 games with the win yesterday, but who cares? The Indians are back on track. They're game over 500 now, and hopefully they got their little rough patch, as every team goes through and through the course of a 162-game season. Hopefully they got their little slump out of the way early in the season, and hopefully they play like this the rest of the year.
Yeah, the funny thing is the slump kind of started, I think, when Michael Bourne went on the DL early in the year, and he's been gone almost a month now. But he went out, and they started slumping a little bit, and then all of a sudden, the strangest savior ever came out of nowhere, and he won Player of the Week last week. It was Ryan Rayburn, hit 4 home runs in 2 days and 9 RBI in 3 days. He only played 5 games, and he won Player of the Week because the Indians were off. Yeah, or he had a day off, and the Indians were off one. But man, he was just on fire.
Yeah, are you sure that the stats that you just read off, I think he hit like something like 560 too.
Yeah, it was over
Was
550.
that Major League Baseball or was that softball, slow pitch softball that he was playing in?
I
Which
don't
league?
know. But I mean, like I said at the time, as soon as he goes 0 for 4, release him. But really, maybe if they could trade him somewhere, someone thinks he's a starter when he's really not. They might actually be able to get a return for a player who may be useless for the rest of the season. I don't know. He's already hit his RBI or close to his RBI total and beat his home run total by 4 times of all of last season.
Yeah, here you go again, wanting to trade everybody. Just as soon as somebody gets good, you're a typical Cleveland sports fan. Just as soon as somebody gets good, you want to trade
No, I only want to trade people I didn't want in the first place.
them. Well, I'm sorry, you just get on me for always wanting to trade some of our star relievers for everyday players. And but no, I Ryan Rayburn. Listen, Rayburn is here for the entire season, unless the Indians just fall out of the race come the trading deadline, which I think they're going to be in it. Modifying my prediction from
Oh,
the beginning of
okay.
the
Now you're
year.
going to change the month in.
No, we're getting off topic if we go there.
Just
I
like
don't want to stay
your
on topic.
first the first time this year you picked the Indians to win a series, and they did. I feel like it's not fair. Like you changed your tune.
Not
You're
changing
supposed to
my
pick the
tune.
Indians to lose. That's your bit.
Anyway, no, Rayburn is somebody that's going to be here for the rest of the season, and you're going to see less of him when Bourne comes back.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to get more at bats, but you're going to start seeing less of him. But I mean,
How is that possible?
but listen, a
He's
guy that
gonna
can come off
DH. He's gonna get more
a guy
bats
that
to
can
play in
come off
less
the
games.
bench and provide some pop. I mean,
You mean like Giambi?
between him and from the right-handed
Oh, okay.
side, idiot. I mean, this is what the Indians were missing, right-handed power all of last season. And they've got two guys. Rayburn, he's just having one of those years where, I mean, it's sort of like, well, I'll give you an example here, okay? Josh Reddick came out of nowhere last year, all right? And now he's back to his old self. You know, Matt and Rick were talking the entire, most of the game when Reddick was up at the plate during yesterday's ball game about what's happened to Josh Reddick. You know, his swing mechanics are, well, he came out of nowhere last year, and he's back to where he was before last year. And maybe Rayburn's having one of those years that Reddick had last year. Of course, Rayburn's not going to play every day. But maybe for once, the Indians struck gold in their 1 year position player rentals that they like to get.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, and Ryan, or Mark Reynolds is another one of those 1 year guys, and he's another really good choice. And I loved that signing from the first second. And he hit a ball yesterday as far as just about anyone I've ever seen hit a ball. And they kept showing replays of Mark McGwire's home run back in whatever it was like 98 or 99 or something like that. And it wasn't that much further than Reynolds was yesterday. I wouldn't be surprised if Reynolds put one a little deeper at some point, even.
Even touching the scoreboard.
Yeah,
Well,
why
here's
not?
Mark Reynolds.
He was only like 5 rows away.
Yeah, he was pretty close. I could see him hitting one onto Eagle Avenue, out and beyond the home run
Yeah, sure.
porch. But Mark Reynolds, he's just all American muscle. That's all he is. I mean, in a no homo type of way. But he's just all American muscle, whereas Mark McGwire was a freak of nature with the steroids that he was probably taking.
Well, he was taking steroids, but they weren't like the steroids that are out there now. They were more basic things, and from what I've heard, most of the stuff that we know he was on doesn't really build muscle mass. So I think that was him. Like, that was really him. And you just hear the word steroids, and you automatically think, you know, that that's the reason he looks like that. But, I mean, I'm on steroids. I don't look like that.
You look nothing.
I am not going to tell
near.
You. I'm not going to tell you what steroids I'm on, but they're good ones.
Right. Well, Reynolds. Yeah, Viagra doesn't count.
That's not a steroid. See, a steroid is a specific, biological term or whatever for a certain type of compound. It's not necessarily something that builds muscle mass.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how you got from Mark Reynolds to you taking steroids, but anyway, Mark Reynolds might be just a one-year rental player, and he's probably only going to be here for 1 year.
No, I don't know. If he plays
no matter
great,
what he does.
They could re-sign him, but...
if he plays great, they're not going to have enough money to re-sign him.
Yeah, I guess.
Okay, but he's all of a sudden become one of my favorite hitters on the team.
Oh, yeah. I can't... him and Carlos Santana, I mean, when they're up, you actually, for the first time in a long time, expect something good to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember, that used to be when Tommy was up, every time he came up to bat, I was like, well, he could hit a home run right now. Like, you didn't really think about that about any other player after him.
Right.
You had guys like in the last few years, like Shelly Duncan, who he seemed like he was a power hitter and he seemed like he should have had that thing, but he never hit 20 home runs a year. Like he should have been able to. He has the body type and the swing to be a true power hitter, and he just never really did it. And they've had other guys like him as well over the past few years. It just even Pronk in his late years. You know, you saw what he could do once in 05, you know, in 06, and then, you know, it just never happened again. And so you never, even in the late years, when he came up, you were like, well, he's probably going to get out. Not, he's probably going to hit a home run. And Reynolds and Santana are now, they're going to get a hit of some kind. You don't know where it's going to go, but they're definitely going to do something, put the ball in play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. And getting case in point in Carlos Santana, there's been no bigger critic of Carlos Santana than me.
No, probably not.
But I think the biggest reason why I was a critic was because I saw the potential in him, and he just seemed like he didn't want to play baseball. He just seemed like he didn't want to be at the game. He seemed like he was just lackadaisical or lazy behind the plate defensively.
I think it's pretty much just your racism poking out.
It's not my racism. Carlos Santana in no way is a thug. All right.
Oh, see, now you're. I was going a different way with that, but
no, I like his music though.
Yeah, he's great. That's why I always, when he hits it, I always play like smooth, and then at the end of the game, you play I'm winning. You know, it's like he's got his own soundtrack.
Yeah. Well, the one thing they're missing is Black Magic Woman. Every time he hits a double.
Oh yeah. That's a good one too.
Every time he gets to second base, they should play Black Magic.
Yeah, why not?
But I think now you were at spring training, and I know you weren't in the clubhouse. You weren't on the practice fields, actually on the field.
Yeah, it's close enough. You can hear what's going on.
Yeah. Do you think it may be a case of Terry Francona just kicking his butt around a little bit, whereas Manny Acta never did, and Carlos sort of woke up and said,
"You know,
hey, it's time for me to start producing."
Yeah, it could be, but the weird thing about spring training is you never see the catchers. They hide the catchers away on a backfield, and I think it's because Sandy Alomar is really shy. I've been down here for 5 years now. Mm-hmm. I have never been within, let's say, 50 feet of Sandy Alomar. I've, shook hands with Mike Hargrove and Manny Acta, and, you know, I've seen these guys. I've been touching distance, you know, like, whatever. They're signing autographs. They're out there. Pretty
You're a
much
creep.
every single player on a team. I think Kenny Lofton kissed my baby or something like that. So if these guys are right there, every single one of them. But I've never seen Sandy Alomar. He's always hiding, and I think he keeps him in the back. And so I never really saw the catchers this year except in games. So at the practice fields, they're off. So I don't know. And I don't know that Francona was with them at all, except for maybe behind the scenes. But on the field, Francona was doing other things. He was doing infield work and stuff like that.
Well, regardless, Carlos Santana's finally his production is much wanted. I mean, he solidifies his lineup like you wouldn't believe. Without Carlos Santana, I don't think they'd be scoring as many runs as they are now.
Oh,
Obviously, because
no.
Santana's leading everything in Major League Baseball, except home runs, because that's Mark Reynolds.
Yeah.
But I mean, he, you know, and especially where he hits in the lineup, he protects everybody else. So.
And one thing I love about Santana is I consider him a long-term Indian. He's been here for a few years now, and I expect he'll be here for a few years coming on. And it makes, to me, it makes the team more legitimate. And it may mean nothing, and it doesn't mean anything as far as playoffs go or anything like that. But to me personally, I like the team to be consistent. I like it to be the same people year after year. So I like that now Kipnis and Cabrera are heating up. It wasn't just Swisher and Reynolds and Giambi and Rayburn. Like, those guys are all brand new this year. I don't want them to be the entire team. So when you have Santana hitting there as one of the top two hitters on the team, it really legitimizes it a little more.
Well, I would expect a little bit of regression from Carlos Santana. Not to put the I know I'm
Well,
a
on his batting
D
average,
I
definitely.
know I'm a well, on his batting average, but on his overall production as well. I know I'm a depressing, I'm a negative type of person, as you like to describe me as.
Yeah,
But taking a
a
look
Debbie
at
Downer is what we like to call him.
That'd be Downer. That's so 1990s, man. But anyway, I mean, you look at Carlos Santana's career batting average of balls in play. And if those of you who are not familiar with that stat, batting average of balls in play, which you might see as BABIP, is essentially every time the batter hits the ball somewhere onto the field, what his batting average is on that particular pitch or on that particular ball in play. Now, for his career, Carlos Santana is hitting 280 so far through May 7th. His 2013 batting average of ball in play is 431. So he's going to regress a lot in the next coming months, and a lot of people are going to see it as a slump, but it's just him returning back to basically where he should be.
Yeah, and
And
I wouldn't expect him to hit
I
more
think
than
even the
310.
Well, yeah, and I think the average fan should come to expect that as well. I mean, he's, you know, this type of production that we're seeing from him is good, and it's certainly wanted, but it's not going to continue. So let's ride this as long as we can.
Oh yeah. Well, even I think his average will go down, but I don't think the power production is going to drop. I do think he's a 20 to 25 home run guy, and maybe 30 doubles, something like that. I think he has that type of production in him. So I like I said, I think the average will drop, but I think the on base percentage is going to stay up there because he walks all the time, and maybe as pitchers start staying away from him a little more, he's going to start walking more, even though he'll get less hits. So I'm gonna. And by the way, that was a terrible description of batting average on balls in play. Batting average on balls in play is just your batting average minus the at bats where you struck out or hit a home run.
Well, okay. Yeah, you said a little more simpler than what I
And
can
I'll say,
describe
and it's a bullshit stat, but we'll get into that later about
it.
bullshit
Okay.
stats.
I'll argue that. I'll definitely argue that with you because I'm a big
Oh,
BABIP
okay.
guy.
Well, okay. Now moving on a little bit. Nick Swisher's been out the past week or so. He missed four straight games, I believe, and plus an off day in the middle. And he hurt his left shoulder throwing balls in from right field because it's so much further than he has to throw when he plays first base. So first, let me say he's a pussy. Second,
Almost like Michael Bourne. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Michael Bourne cut his finger, and we all know
Let's
how much it hurts when you cut your finger.
stay on topic.
Okay, so yeah, so he was in there
We'll get to
because
that
of
later.
Michael Bourne's injury. He was out in the outfield, and because of his injury, then they had to put Rayburn out there a little more, which hasn't been a bad thing to this point. He's been pretty good defensively too. as well as the incredible shit he's been doing on offense. But, you know, Swisher hasn't been able to get out there. And he just got back in the lineup. He's, you know, able to DH and probably play first now. But I would expect, since it only took 5 games for him to hurt his shoulder, they're probably not going to be putting him out there very much more this year. Now, going into this season, they thought he was going to be the starting right fielder. It's a damn good thing he wasn't, because I have a feeling the same thing would have happened maybe a little further into the season if he had had all of spring training out in right field, you know, to warm it up. But it still probably would have happened at some point, and then they'd be stuck without another outfielder. So at least this way they have 3 outfielders without him. But it does make a significant difference to the roster.
Yeah, it certainly does. And, you know, the Indians are always a really close-knit as far as revealing injuries. The only thing we've heard from the Indians camp so far has been that his shoulder is, quote, sore. That can mean a wide variety of things. It could be a slight AC sprain, or it could be something which is a lot more serious, or it could be just simple shoulder impingement syndrome. We don't know exactly what's going on with Nick Swisher or how severe it is. I certainly would not rule out a trip to the DL especially this early in the season.
I think you can, because Mark Reynolds is good enough defensively that Swisher could just play DH. And I haven't heard that he has any issues batting. He's only having these issues in the field. So if he can DH for, you know, a month or whatever he needs to do primarily, I think that would take care of the problem.
Well, he hasn't been one of the issues is he available to pinch hit? You know, if you can keep on the bench to have him pinch hit, not only could he DH, but he can sit on the bench and pinch hit as well. Because I know they'll be going to Philly, coming up here at the end of the month, and so they're going to need some pinch hitters coming off the bench. All I know is the Indians in the last couple of years have had so many injuries. It seems like every time Mark and Chris probably come to work every single morning and probably just expect a new injury. And I think they're going to play it very cautiously, especially this early in the season.
Yeah, like I said, I think that they could take care of it. As long as he stays out of the outfield, it doesn't seem to be an issue.
So you would keep him off the DL, have him ride the bench, sit the bench, and have him come off the bench.
No, start as the DH. And when they play in the National League, he can play first base. But that's only 2 games. It's only a 2-game series there.
Again, we have to see how serious it is. We're not going to get that. We're not going to get any indication whatsoever from the Indians camp. So we're going to have to wait and see. Obviously, it's going to be a lot more serious if we see him put on the DL. If we see him put on the DL, it's probably a slight AC sprain. Which, you know, put him in a sling. He should be good to go in about probably a week to 20 days or so.
But I do.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I think this could be a more serious thing on the long term, and just that he may be done in the outfield as far as his career is concerned. Like, he wasn't that great of a defensive outfielder anyway, but I think he may be done. So you're looking at, like, where he signed a 4-year contract. So next year, he could be limited to just starting at first base, and then after that, he could be limited to DH at some point. You could have the same issue like with Hafner and his elbow, where, you know, he couldn't throw, so they couldn't put him out in the field. They couldn't even put him out there 1 game a year. Now, I don't think Swisher will ever get that bad because he's in shape. But you know, there is a difference. When you're in a good shape, injuries tend to heal faster. You know, you're just healthier all around.
Right. Well, we shall see. And you sort of open this segment up with wondering what's going to happen or what should happen with the roster. I'm sort of in your camp. At this point, unless they know, well, obviously they know a lot more than we do. But if it's not serious, just keep them on the 25 and I wouldn't mess with the roster at all.
They've been playing with a short roster almost all year anyway. The last one was Vinny Pastano, who just went on the DL yesterday, and he missed almost a full week before he was put on the DL because he has elbow soreness that he says he's had for the last 3 years, which is a great thing to hear that all of a sudden he's got elbow soreness, he's had it for 3 years. So the first thing you think of is that he's going to have Tommy John surgery, and he's going to be out for a year and a half.
Yeah.
And it's going to ruin the career of one of the best young relief pitchers I've ever seen in my life. But at least to this point, it sounds like he's going to do his 10 days and come back. Like, it's not that serious. But again, because the Indians are so quiet about this type of stuff, they really are super sensitive, about letting anything get out. You don't know. Maybe it is worse than that. When he was originally hurt, and he was day to day, they didn't make any announcements saying Vinny Pastano is day to day, because they didn't want the other team to know that they were stuck. In the first like 3 games, they didn't need him anyway, because they were winning by so much. So he wouldn't have pitched anyway. And then that one game came, and they pitched. A seventh inning came up, and Joe Smith is not warming up. They bring in Cody Allen. Cody Allen gives up the lead, bring in Joe Smith for the eighth inning. And they're like, what's going on? Why isn't Vinny out? Or why wasn't Smith out there for the seventh, and why wasn't, Vinny out there for the eighth? And then the next day it turns out, oh, Vinny's hurt, and he hasn't been able to pitch it for 4 days, but we just didn't know because it didn't matter.
Well, yeah, for purposes of not tipping off to the other team exactly who's day to day on your team and who isn't is a good thing. But for us fans and us writers and those of that talk about the team, it's really frustrating not knowing exactly how severe
Oh
a particular injury
yeah,
is.
and in that case, I mean, I was mad at Francona, because I'm saying, how could you put Allen in that situation? It doesn't make any sense when you've got four or five other relievers, even Brian Shaw or something. Like, you had a bunch of other relievers who would have been better off in that spot. But as soon as you hear that, oh well, there's no Pastano, it bumps the whole bullpen back, and now all of a sudden they didn't have that many more relievers that would have been so much better.
And that's sort of that realization right there is sort of what I try to tell most people that try to argue sports with me or try to second guess what a manager does or what a coach does. And that is simply we don't have access to the type of information that they do. There are reasons why they make certain calls. They substitute certain batters in, they substitute certain pitchers in for different reasons. And a lot of that is due to proprietary information that will never come out, that they'll never leak to the media, that they'll never even tell the media. So that next time you see a manager, especially Terry Francona, do what you think is a stupid move, then it's probably Terry's not a stupid guy. He did that for a reason.
Yeah, I think sometimes he's just trying to mess with you, though.
Yeah, whatever.
He's trying to win every single game, or sometimes he's like, yeah, I think we get him.
Well, that sort of segues into something I wanted to bring up and
Okay,
talk
go ahead.
about, and that is the Indians. Would you say this is a correct statement that the Indians never really make any roster moves or trades or free agent signings on basically the whim? They never do so impulsively, correct?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay. Well, they claimed our old friend Ezekiel Carrera off waivers from Philadelphia last week. And of course, to make room on the 40-man roster, they designated first baseman Mike McAdade for
Yeah.
assignment. Do you think that's maybe possibly an indication that they think that the Swisher injury might be a little more serious than they're leading on, is bringing back Carrera for the outfield depth?
At the time, it could have been, yeah.
Okay.
The interesting thing, McDade is another. I thought you were going to go the other way with that. Was with the McDade thing. He actually got picked up today. And see who team it was, but he's gone. And I saw him in spring training, and he was like the best player on the team. It was like, you don't know who this guy is. He came in from Toronto, and all of a sudden he's killing it. And he was absolutely the first week of the season. Him and Ryan Rayburn were the two best players, and up until the point where McDade was cut, he was like tied for the team lead in ribbies, and he had won a couple of games with, game-winning RBIs. So like he was tearing the cover off the ball, and then he went to AAA and did not tear the cover off the ball. He was very unimpressive there, so they got rid of him. And I don't have a problem with that, because I think Jesus is coming, and anything to clear the way for Jesus is okay by me. I actually have Jesus' name up on my wall.
So you actually think that the second coming is coming really
No, it's
soon,
the
huh?
first coming.
It's the first coming. Oh,
Yeah.
I'm
This is
confused. You said
not
Jesus.
Jesus
You said Jesus is
Sanchez.
coming.
This is not Jesus Montero or someone like that. No, this is Jesus Aguilar.
Oh, him.
The
Okay. See,
greatest Jesus ever.
I thought you had found Christ
Yeah, I did.
over this past
Jesus.
week.
Jesus Aguilar.
Oh.
Not this week. I found him in spring training. He's like 8 feet tall.
It's
Man, it's huge.
funny. I went to the Pirates game this weekend, and there was a guy on the street corner that said Jesus was coming.
Well, he
And
is, but
you.
he's probably going to come to Columbus first. He's still in Akron.
Yeah.
But clearing out McDade maybe made some room for for him there.
Okay, so now that I know that you're talking about Jesus Aguilar.
Yeah, we talked about him. I think we might have talked about him last week. It depends on what got recorded and what didn't.
Boom.
Anyway, yeah. So Zeke is back, and he cleared waivers today. So he played. He was on the team 2 days. Essentially, he had one hit when he was with the Phillies, so they released him. He was batting 76 or 77. He goes 2 for 4 with the Indians in 2 games. He also had a sacrifice bunt. The first game he didn't start. He came in late and he got the sack bunt. And then the second game he went 2 for 4, with a ribby and a run. So he goes from batting 77 or something like that with no runs, no ribbies, to a run, a ribby, and he's batting 176 in the span of a game and an at bat, or so. So I mean that really bumped him up there. And then they sent him back down to the minors. I at some point, they need another outfielder. The fact is, today's the 7th of May, and they're playing the Athletics. And tonight, Mike Aviles will be starting for the first time this year in the outfield. That's a dangerous spot when you've got Rayburn in right and Aviles in left. All of a sudden, you're taking what was supposed to be the greatest outfield ever with three center fielders, and you got a center fielder and two third basemen. Or two second basemen, whatever you want to call them. It's not quite as impressive defensively, and it could be an issue.
It's not, no. And they don't, the outside of Carrera, they don't really have any very good athletic defensive
Well,
outfielders either. They've
I
got some
think they
guys that can
do.
hit.
Tim Fedorov is a pretty good defensive outfielder. Now, he may not be able to hit, and he hit really well at Double A and Triple A last year, but this year he isn't doing quite as well. No one at Columbus isn't doing as well as Akron and Carolina are right now, as far as offense goes. But Fedorov is still down there. He's another center fielder. They could bring him up in a pinch if they had to, but I prefer Carrera.
Well, don't look now, but Jeremy Hermida, I can't talk today. Jeremy Hermida is slugging
Did
.466
see
in
that.
103 at bats. He's got 5 home runs,
They bring him up. It's
and
just gonna be like the Exiles from 2008 or something like that.
well, and here's a name for you. All right, he's had 11 at bats so far. Okay, at Columbus, he's hit 2 home runs. 5 RBIs, and he's slugging 1,000. He's hitting .455. He's a guy that can play left field and provide some right-handed pop. And that name is Matt Laporta.
Oh, okay, I did see that. He just came off the disabled list.
He did come off the disabled list. Don't look now, but he's got 2 home runs. He's back.
Well, yeah, because he's the greatest power hitter in the history of the Clippers. And he's going to stay that. Like, he's going to be setting records that nobody wants to set. Maybe he does
Well, I'm
want to
just
set it.
saying.
Maybe that's his calling in life, is to be a minor league first base, right fielder, whatever he wants to be. Maybe that's his calling. Just like, he has his Jesus, I've got mine. They're different people, but they play on the same team.
So his calling is to break Crash Davis's all-time AAA home run record.
Yeah, essentially.
Well, he is playing first base in Columbus. But obviously, I mean, we've seen him play left field
And you don't like to see that at
in
all.
the past.
That's a bad thing to see.
Defensively,
It's not something you
yes.
want to look at.
Defensively, yes. But yeah, you're right. They all of a sudden, outfield and depth was a strength of this team in April, and all of a sudden, you look and it's thin. But that's the beauty of baseball. You play 162 games. You have a couple of injuries here and there. It seems like for the Indians, all the injuries happen all at once. And
Yeah.
all of a sudden, you're looking up and you're saying, oh, crap. We don't have as much outfield as we thought we would have. you lose Vinny Pistano, all of a sudden you're set up, your one of your primary setup men are gone for 15
They
days.
should still be okay.
They should be, yeah. They have a deep enough bullpen.
And Brian Shaw's good. He gave a run yesterday, but they made him pitch two innings. So, that was his first run of the year, too. Or second run of the year, something like that. So, I mean, you don't really worry about that type of thing.
Yeah.
I think he was just trying to give Chris Perez a save opportunity because he hasn't had one in a very long time. He's only had three this year. And three saves,
yeah.
Four opportunities. So, I mean, they got to do something to give him some saves out there.
Yeah, the Indians... The Indians' offense is driving a whole lot of fantasy owners wild so far this season because Chris Perez doesn't have any save opportunities.
Yeah, it's all those people, and this is a good segue, I guess, all those people who believe in those counting stats, that they love the superficial saves, holds, and win stats,
Mm-hmm.
It really does mess with their saves. And they're not going to be stealing any relief wins either because they've been scoring early and, keeping the game up there. I actually did want to talk about some statistical stuff today that doesn't really involve the Indians.
Statistical stuff.
Some statistical stuff, yeah. It actually came from the White Sox. Everybody knows their wonderful WGN announcing team. And through the years of listening or watching baseball on MLB TV, where you can only watch the home team feed, I've seen every single, basically, television team in baseball. I've seen pretty much all the AL ones and most of the NL ones at this point. That everyone the Indians have played at the on the road, I've seen their team. The White Sox announcing group is the most homer-friendly announcing group there is in all of Major League Baseball. There's no question. And they're awful. I can't stand them. But anyway,
you can put it on the board. Yes. He gone.
Pretty much. That's what I'm going with. So anyway, our sister site called Awful Announcing, they're also part of the Blogwin network. They brought this to my attention that Hawk Harrelson was on the MLB network. And I don't have the MLB network, so I watched the video on YouTube to see what he said. And he had some really interesting points against sabermetrics. He even came up with his own stat. If you'd like to hear it. The stat is abbreviated TWTW. Now, have you heard about this?
No, why don't you tell the audience what
you have
about?
Any guess what TWTW could stand for in the world of sabermetrics?
Titty wings. I don't know.
It stands for, he said this is the only stat that matters. No other stats matters. Not just sabermetric stats like WAR and VORP and other type of stuff. He's talking about wins. He's talking about RBI, home runs. None of those stats matter. The only thing that matters is this one stat, this TWTW, and that is the will to win.
Mm.
So kind of like a power positive thinking thing here.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe that you can win, you will win.
Interesting.
So that is why, Matt LaPorta is doing so well, because he has that will to win.
Hmm.
So he's so positive and he has that will to win, and that is why he has more home runs than Albert Pujols.
Hmm. Interesting.
So that's the only thing
I
that
wonder,
matters, is the will to win.
Did somebody bring this up to him? What happens if both teams have the will to win?
Well,
or in baseball terms, what if the pitcher has the will to win and the batter has the will to win too?
Well,
what
no, it's an amount. It's not like it's not a yes or no answer. It's like this guy's got 100 will to win, and that guy's only got 42.
Hmm,
interesting. So you've got like whoever has more will to win wins. And as far as I'm aware, it's 100% of the time. So like whoever's got the most will to win, I would guess maybe it's Justin Verlander just by output. Although you can't use other stats to judge. I don't really know what you can use to judge.
I don't know what you can use at all.
Yeah,
to calculate.
Because no other stats count. I would assume that Lou Marson is up there.
Mm.
Right? I mean, the way he blocked the plate,
Yeah, I don't know if you can... How do you quantify that, though? I would think maybe the amount of successful at... I mean, would batting average be...
No, there's no stats. No, there's no stats. It's just the will to win. So I think Marson's
got to
have at
least,
like, 45 will to wins.
But what I'm saying is you have to have some sort of number, right? So say you have 45. Well, okay, say you're saying Lou Marcy has 45 wins. You'd have to go back in a baseball game or observe a baseball game
No,
and
no,
count.
no, 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 you don't understand. That's all bullshit. That's what I was saying, batting average on balls in play is bullshit. All that is bullshit. All that matters is the will to win. So, like you would say, Carlos Santana probably has like a will to win a five. Yeah, maybe a negative five. That's what you would give him, at least before this season. But maybe Mark Reynolds has a will to win of like 62. So that's a pretty good one. But Verlander's like at 95.
Okay, I think I'm catching on right
Yeah, so
now.
basically
So
that's.
it's all subjective.
Yeah, that's the whole point. There's nothing analytical about it.
So you just look at a certain player and you say this player has a will to win of on a scale of 1 to
No, there's no
100.
scale.
There's no
No,
scale.
I'm just making shit up. So, like, Babe Ruth has a will to win of 2,000.
Okay.
It's just whoever has more. And that tells you who wins. Yeah. So,
Wonder what Chris Magruder's will to win was.
it was pretty high. Jody Garrett's was higher. That's why he went out and got the job.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I posted the video, or I posted the link to the video, up on the on Burning River Baseball, with this broadcast. So if anyone listening to this wants to watch the video, I welcome you to. Basically, his arguments against sabermetrics were that he didn't think it covers enough. Like, I don't think he understood what was going on. Like, I don't think he understands sabermetrics at all. Like, he didn't bother doing any research into it because he was saying it doesn't include fielding, which it does. And that it didn't include pitching. And so, like, like there were certain things that weren't included in the stats. And I'm pretty sure everything he said is included in some stat somewhere. You know, like, things are a lot more advanced than they were back in the days of just fielding percentage. So that.
Yeah, fielding percentage, home runs, and RBIs.
Yeah, I mean, the people. There's just a lot more to look at now. And so. We do have a lot of different stats, and it's weird because, and I don't particularly like WAR and VORP and that type of stat because I can't calculate it. I prefer stats that I can calculate, but I do trust that those stats are pretty legitimate because, I mean, when you look at the top of the list and who's leading in WAR, it's almost always the guys who you think are running for the MVP. If you look at their stats personally, that's. Those are the best players in the league are the guys that are up there in WAR. So obviously the equation that they're using is fairly accurate.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and if you look at most of the sites too, like Baseball Prospectus and FanGraphs, most of these sites that do heavy promotion of their version of WAR, or in Baseball Prospectus's case, WARP, WARP, wins above replacement. The numbers are very close. There's just a couple of different slight variations in the formula that they use, but you're right. I mean, generally, you're not going to see a bad player with a high WAR that's going to surprise
Yeah,
you.
I and I've been doing this for years. Before I even started paying attention to the sabermetric stuff, I started doing my player of the game stat back in 2007, and I didn't realize what I'm doing at the time. I didn't really realize what I was doing, but it kept getting more and more complicated to the point now where it's almost like one of those stats where you can't. It would be very difficult for someone to compute this. Some of the numbers I use are only numbers that I subjectively put in there. Like base running numbers and defensive numbers that aren't really counted on site, so you couldn't just plug this formula into some site and use it. But I usually get the same results as the other things I'm lo at other stats I'm looking at. Like the same guy is number one and the same guy is number two. You generally, I mean, it's not too hard to judge it that way. And that's all these stats are trying to do, is put a compare these players. It's hard to compare a speedy center fielder to a power hitting first baseman to a starting pitcher and a relief pitcher. So to compare all these guys together, you need some sort of stat that can kind of equalize everything.
Well, I think that's what a lot of these stats try to do with positional adjustments. I mean, one of the things that makes WAR pretty popular, especially among the stat heads out there, is that they do positional adjustments. and they do park factor adjustments,
Yeah, and they
and
also
they do a
adjust
ton of
for
different adjustments.
decades in time period they're playing in, so you can compare players from the 20s to players today. So
Yeah,
that
and they
I like
do
that too.
exactly, and they do regression to the mean analysis too. So a lot of these stats, they do a great job of what statistics call normalizing stats, to make it as if, in normalizing a stat is essentially assuming that everybody is on an equal playing field. Everybody has the same amount of talent. Everybody plays in the same park, same weather conditions, facing the same pitcher for 162 games, what their stats would be like.
Yeah, and I think in some of those stats actually do better, like as far as you're talking about predicting what somebody's going to do, than if you just look at straight up home runs and production numbers, RBIs, runs scored. That same stuff doesn't generally equate year after year. And I think, with Hawk and him, when people like Hawk Harrelson, like Joe Morgan, I think the thing is that they don't understand these stats, and they don't know what's in them. Maybe if they had taken the time to look it up and figure out what is actually going into these numbers, and seeing that it is the numbers that they trust, like home runs, RBI, well, RBIs end up being there, but home runs, doubles, steals, that those type of numbers they trust, because they're things that actually happened and they saw happen. If they knew that those numbers were going in there, maybe they would, trust it a little more. I did want to bring up something else that's I think is related. In football, to me, the stats are a lot less meaningful than in baseball. You've got your because you can choose who to throw the ball to. In baseball, every player essentially has about the same amount of at bats. If you have the same starting nine every day, yeah, the ninth guy's going to bat a few less times. But in general, you have to bat in order every time. But in football, you can choose who you're throwing to and whatever. So stats to me don't mean as much. But they've actually embraced a kind of sabermetric stat long before baseball people ever did, and it's called the quarterback rating. And no one ever even questions it. They just put it out there, and you got Troy Aikman or whoever talking about it, and they all just go with pretty much whoever's got the better quarterback rating is the better quarterback. And I have the formula for this thing, and truly, I think compared to, most baseball stats, you compare this to like OPS or something, it's ridiculous. You got completions divided by attempts times 100, and then that whole thing minus 30, and then that whole thing divided by 20, and that's added to the combination of touchdowns divided by attempts times 100 divided by 5, and 9.5 minus interceptions divided by attempts times 100 divided by 4, in yards per attempt minus 3. Divided by 4, and you add all those numbers up together, and they can't be greater than 2.375, and then you divide that whole thing by 0.06. That's fucking crazy.
Makes sense to me,
I
doesn't
mean,
it?
it seems like most of it is just arbitrary numbers that they just threw in there because it made it equate out, right? It made it like give them the numbers that they wanted to see. So they kind of messed around with it. Because, I mean, you can't just pick 9.5 for the interception number. Like, 9.5 is the interceptions that you want. So you're just you're taking 9.5 minus the interceptions per attempt and then multiplying that by 100 to get a percent or whatever. So it's just, it's extremely complicated. It looks like mostly arbitrary, but everybody falls in line with that.
Oh, yeah, nobody ever questions it. Or nobody even I think it's you don't hear too many you don't have as many stat heads following the NFL as you do Major League Baseball. And I think one of the big questions that still hasn't been able to really nobody's really answered for me is who in the hell came up with quarterback rating? Why did they? Was it the NFL that came up with it? Was it a somebody like a Bill James that's just not as famous as Bill James that came up with it? And quarterback rating is just weird. And it's a good question. You bring up a really valid point, and that is why doesn't anybody ever question it? And
Okay, so it was
I don't know.
okay.
I
It
don't know.
was developed by the Pro Football Hall of Fame, by a group of people, and Basically, yeah, they didn't know how to say who the best quarterback was. So we're like, well, this will tell you who the best quarterback is. And there's actually multiple different ones. There's ones for the AFL, there's one for the NCAA, there's one for, like, there's different stats for different leagues. That's crazy too to me. It's like if
Well,
you
yeah, and
calculated batting average differently across,
it's the
when the
same.
batting
Yeah, it's.
champion is the guy who has the most hits per at bat. It's hits divided by at bats. That's it.
Well, and that's what essentially that's what WAR is trying to do in baseball. But the thing is, the NFL Hall of Fame and its beat writers probably don't go by QBR. They probably go by subjective observation, which is who we thought was the better player by what we witnessed.
Well, yeah,
And the Baseball Hall of Fame does that as well, but there has to be some sort of cutoff point in comparing numbers in different players is trying to get into the Hall of Fame. And I think WAR could be something that could be seen as a stat to get into the Baseball Hall of
see,
Fame when you're
I
comparing two
actually
players.
disagree with that, because I think w once your career is done. You did. We know what you did. And to me, if you hit 500 home runs, you should be in the Hall of Fame. Even if you hit 500 home runs, and batted 260, you should still be in the Hall of Fame. And it doesn't matter. Maybe your WAR isn't as good, but you did something incredible. Just like I think if you are, I don't know, are the home run champion both in single season and career, you should probably be in the Hall of Fame because you did something exemplary, and you deserve credit for those things. So you should be in there. So I think it should be more based on the total stats and less on that. Although I do think that if you have like if there's a guy that doesn't stick out at all, like let's say he had less than 2,000 hits or whatever, but for some reason, his WAR is way up there and it doesn't make any sense. I think that guy should get in too. I think he should get, at least a second look. So look back on that guy and see, maybe he was better. Maybe he was better than we gave him credit for.
Well, stats are just going to continue to get bigger because of the social media dominance. And those that blog, like us, and those that tweet, like us, baseball are more familiar with these stats. We're growing up with these stats now. And these stats, especially in the blogosphere, is the norm.
Yeah, and
And as the old school dies off, the new school is going to take over, not only in management, but in writing, in broadcasting, and it's just these stats are going to be more widely used and widely accepted.
yeah, and I think if you look at if you're just I love numbers, and when you like if you like numbers and you like the math part of it, then you will flock to baseball first, because there's no other sport that gives you so many. Like basically equivalent numbers to work with because everybody has so many at bats. In basketball, you only got five guys per team, and if one guy wants to, he could pretty much Kobe Bryant all the shots. And so if you're LeBron or Kobe, you could just take over the game and score 30 points in a row. That's not this in baseball. You can't do that. It doesn't matter if you want to. It doesn't matter if you have Albert Pujols or Barry Bonds or Babe Ruth. They're still only allowed to bat once every nine people. Eight other people have to be bat in between them, no matter what. It doesn't matter. You can't get to the ninth inning and then all of a sudden be like, "Oh, I want him to bat first." No, or bat third. He's going to bat third in every inning. You can't do that. It's not your choice. It's not your choice. So everything's more normalized, and you have so. And because guys have 500 at bats a year, that actually gives you a legitimate look at what they did. It's not like, if you're a quarterback and you're throwing 20 times a game or something like that, and you only have 16 games, that's not that many pass completions. I guess you could, your percentage is okay, but, what if he tried to throw deep every time? Or what if like, you can't get the breakdown like you can in baseball. Like in baseball, you can have so many at bats that you can have a legitimate thing of what this guy does. With two strikes and a runner on second.
Well,
You can break it down into positions and still have a number that means something.
I think you're comparing apples to oranges
Well, that's the whole point. Why would you compare
because
apples to apples?
you can compare other football.
That
Well,
would be stupid. An
the
apple
core.
is some a fruit that you can bite through, an orange you have to peel first. An apple is usually red or green, an orange is usually orange. See, you can compare them very easily.
I don't know what type of oranges you've been eating, but I just eat the skin right off the orange,
You're just
just like an apple.
on the
No, because you can compare two NFL players because they play the same amount of games.
What I'm saying is,
Now, I would,
when
but
I'm talking more of
I
the
would
prediction
argue.
thing, like is like how long will that last? How long if he makes, let's say a guy makes 80% of his passes, but all he's doing is throwing little dunk off passes to guys within 5 yards, and you're gonna compare him to a guy who throws downfield every time. Yeah, you know,
Yeah, but you
there's a
can't.
lot more
But then
variation in that.
okay, I sort of agree there, but you cannot. I think where you were heading, you were going for the sample size argument that
Yeah,
there's
that
not
is
enough,
it.
there's not
Yes.
big enough sample size. But I'd argue, yeah, there is a big enough sample size, but the only problem is teams run different types of offenses.
Exactly, and you have a choice. You have a complete choice. It's not like you throw the ball and it randomly goes somewhere like it does when you're batting. When you're batting, you can try to hit it the other way, or you can try to pull the ball. But what if he thought it was a fastball and it was a changeup? You know, whatever. You know, like, you can't really control where the ball is going. As a pitcher, you can try to throw the ball inside, and sometimes it ends up a foot outside. And sometimes it's a foot outside the plate, and the umpire still calls it a strike. You don't know. Sometimes Carlos Santana's batting, and no one's going to remember this because no one's going to hear it like a day after the game is over. But you can just say any game when that happened. Angel Hernandez.
Well, I kind of see where you're going with this, but, but you're still treading thin ice here. You're still trying to,
All I'm
you're
saying
trying to
is.
argue and
Wait, all
go
I'm
ahead.
saying is that numbers people prefer baseball because of that. Numbers people hate hockey because there's no numbers at all. There's nothing to do. What, you scored one goal. Yay, you did it. You won. Game-winning goal. You got a game-winning goal. So that's like they make up stats in hockey. They give three people assists because they don't have any other stats. They have to fucking throw. Same thing with soccer because there's so little scoring. You know, basketball is probably the next best one. It's better than football. Because your shooting percentages and your free throw percentages are significant. You know, they shoot, as long as you shoot enough, those numbers mean something. But to me, just as a pure numbers thing, baseball is by far the best. And it really, I mean, you can normalize stats and compare players from the entire history of the game.
Yeah, because you're primarily dealing with the same constraints for about 100 years that baseball players all face.
Yeah.
27 outs. You have to get 27 outs to win a game. You've got 9 innings. You've got nine guys in the starting. You got nine guys in the lineup. You face one pitcher. So you've got certain constraints that make things more normalized than you do in every other sport. So I kind of see what you're saying, but you cannot compare football with baseball when it comes to how to evaluate a certain player based on his stats.
Well, I wasn't going to tell you what Peyton Manning's batting average is. That's for dang well. I think it's very high, but
No, but you can't
Tom Brady's
compare
batting
Peyton.
average is much lower.
But you can't compare Peyton Manning objectively with Tom Brady if you choose to.
Yes, you
But you
can.
can't compare. Yeah, same way you can compare Miguel Cabrera to Albert
And
Pujols
I guess,
over their
you know
career.
what, the other thing is, in baseball, every player, whether you're the third baseman, the first baseman, or the outfielder, is going to bat. And when they bat, they all have the same exact situation. In football, you got yards thrown, yards caught, you know, yards after catch, yards rushed. You can't compare these things. You can't say that the quarterback is better than the running back because he has more total yards. That's not fair. He's throwing to eight different guys or five different guys, you know, out there. So if you add up all five of those guys, then they're going to equal his total yards thrown. So it's not fair to punish the guys who are catching the ball. They can't magically get the ball. But in baseball, if the number nine guy hits a home run, he still gets a home run and an RBI and a run. You know, like they st it doesn't matter what position you play. It doesn't matter where you bat in the lineup. You get the exact same chance that every single other person does every other time through. That's what I'm saying,
Right.
where it's more normalized. It's the same thing every time, and that gives you better, more reasonable numbers. It's just,
Okay.
it's better as far as that goes. And because of that, you get these stat nerds that went to Ivy League schools, and where are they going to go? Are they going to go to football or basketball? No, because baseball, you can actually do something with the stats and come up with something that means something, and then you can sell that to the Red Sox, like Bill James did, or you can bring it to the Athletics, like Billy Beane has brought in so many different people, and use those numbers, and
To make decisions.
all of a sudden, those teams that have done that, which I can name, I know four in particular, absolutely go on a sabermetric way, and not just using WAR and stuff like that, but using their own statistics that they developed to scout. I could tell you the Tampa Bay Rays do it, the Oakland A's do it, the Boston Red Sox and the Toronto Blue Jays are all huge in it, and I think the Indians are kind of middling. I don't think that they're, at least from an outsider's point of view, I don't think that they're into it as much as the other teams are. But those four teams and maybe the Indians as a fifth are huge into it. And some teams that are completely against it would be like the Arizona Diamondbacks, who specialize in the will to win.
Well, I mean, we're skipping right into the stats versus scouts argument. And you know what's funny? You
No, you
said that
still,
you thought
if you read
you said you
Moneyball.
thought the you said you thought the Indians were, quote, middling in sabermetrics. I would completely disagree with that. I think they're full-fledged, and I think that they were, as a matter of fact, I know that they were revolutionaries in the
Yeah,
game when it
in
comes
some
to using
places they
stats. Because I mean,
yeah, in some
look at some
places
of the
they were.
guys. Well, I'll just give you one example. There are many of them, but I'll just give you one example. If you've seen the movie Moneyball or read the
Yes.
book, Paul De Podesta got a start in Cleveland. So, I mean, that's just one example for you.
Yeah, well, I would say they and they did the, a few different guys, John Farrell and whatever, came out of the Cleveland system and now have went to those other teams that are doing so well. With the same statistical approach. The thing is with the Moneyball especially is not necessarily driving your whole team by statistics, because if you're going to do that, then yeah, sign Albert Pujols and sign you know that those guys are the best. So sign the best guys. They can't do that. So the whole point was finding guys who were undervalued and bringing in these undervalued guys cheaper. I don't think the Indians have done that very well in the past few years, especially considering like the Ubaldo trade, the long-term contract for Travis Hafner, which as an emotional fan I loved, because I love Travis Hafner, I want him to stick around forever. But as a guy who believes in sabermetrics, that was a really stupid deal.
Well, yeah, there are many factors that go into signing a player, though. And
Well, and I mean,
well,
Victor
look.
Martinez was a much better rounded player, but they still traded him. And he would have re-signed in a second. So, I mean,
And
if you're talking
Clifley.
emotionally, Victor wanted to retire as an Indian. He didn't want to just re-sign as an Indian. He wanted to be there forever. Cliff Lee and CeCe were not really on that same level, but Victor cried when they traded him. He wanted to live in Cleveland the rest of his life. He loved it here. And they traded him. So the emotion, you can't say it was emotional with Pronk and then it wasn't emotional with Victor, because Victor wanted to stay even more than Pronk did. So, to go one way or the other, I think in general, yeah, they do take that statistical approach, but it isn't always there 100% of the time.
Oh, but with neither team it is, though. I mean, let me look at the A's. I
Oh yeah,
mean,
they do mess
you
up.
know, yeah, the A's haven't won, with the exception of last year when they won the division. And they don't look like the same team this year as it did last year. But they went 5 years there without winning, without doing anything. And they made a
Yeah.
lot of bad roster decisions as well. They didn't stop doing sabermetrics. You know, it's
Well,
just
and I
what
think,
happens
well,
is.
part of that is they're taking chances. And when you take chances, you can always fail. But they're not taking big money chances. They're not failing like the Yankees are and losing a ton of money. Like last year, they didn't make the playoffs and they, just, or they didn't make the playoffs, so they didn't go far. But they. they spend more money than any other team in the history of baseball by a lot. And they aren't the best for the amount of money they spend. They should be the absolute best team, no question, and they're not. They're not the best team in the division. They're not in
Well,
the best three teams in the division.
sooner or later, all that money that you owe to certain players, especially later on in your career, their value is nowhere near as high as what you're paying them. And that's the problem is a lot of these contracts to win now, to get a player now, teams, especially with big market payrolls like the Red Sox, the Yankees, the Phillies,
Dodgers.
Dodgers, good example. They backload a lot of their contracts.
Yeah, they play
But they're
real
not the
life.
same players, yeah,
Yeah,
because they
they
want
play
to
real
win.
life like I play Madden, where I have my franchise and I backload all my contracts and I'll just say, fuck it, I'll worry about it later. I probably won't even play three more seasons. You know,
Yeah,
like, let's
exactly.
just put that money off on the back and we'll deal with it later. But they're in real life. And that's when the Red
Yeah,
Sox dumped half their salary to the
exactly.
Dodgers.
Yeah.
The Marlins dumped their entire salary to the Blue Jays. You know?
Yeah, it's a philosophy that tomorrow isn't guaranteed. And that makes that does so many things because it appeases the fans. You get more fans into the ballpark, which means more revenue now. You assume that your TV contract is going to give you more money in the future, assuming that you're still good. And that's what gets a lot of general managers in trouble. And the Red Sox have adapted pretty nicely to it, although they're coming back to earth. They're coming back down to earth a little bit recently. I know
Yeah,
they got
we'll
swept
see.
by
Yeah, we'll see if they can keep up with their really hot start after dumping off their entire roster last year to the Dodgers. Oh, I think one
But the
nice.
Yankees, if you look at the East, I mean, 1-2,
Don't like to.
Boston, New York.
I don't
So.
think the season is going to end that way. I think that the Orioles are playing worse than they are. I think the Blue Jays are playing worse than they are, and the Rays are probably even whatever. But you know, like I do think the. The Orioles are going to come back a little bit. They're always going to be underrated in that division. And one thing.
Talking about sabermetrics real quick. I can't remember if I brought this up in the last show or not,
It
but
doesn't matter. I heard
and no, but how in the hell did the Baltimore Orioles let Mark Reynolds walk? They just let him walk away. They weren't even interested in re-signing him at all.
Well, one thing is to. In order to make the draft pick, you have to make. In order to just keep your draft pick, or in order to get a draft. That's what it is. In order to get a draft pick, when you lose a free agent now, you have to make a qualifying offer to him. And a qualifying offer has to be, like, somewhere around, like, the top 10 average at that position. Or something like, or
Right.
there's one. There's a first round draft pick if it's in the top 10, then there's a second round draft pick if it's in the top 20 or whatever. They may not have wanted to make him an offer that big, so they just, and they figured they could sign him for less, so that's why they didn't make the offer. That's a possibility, but I mean, I was so happy when the Indians signed him, man. That's the perfect type of on base percentage heavy player that you'd want. You want a guy who's high in on base percentage and high in slugging percentage because everyone who's read the book. Or paid attention in the last decade knows that those are way more important than batting average, which is what everyone looks at first, or everyone used to look at first. So, and you get a guy that's higher in the back two numbers and lower in the first one, who cares? You know, as long as he's getting on base and knocking in runs, does it really matter if he's getting on base because he's hitting singles?
The whole point in the game of baseball in a half inning is to score as many runs as you possibly can, which also translates into the whole objective of batting is to not get an out. But to get on base in any way you can. Hit by pitch, walk, whatever. Bunt, single, single, double.
And
You
it's
get the
like,
point.
who would you rather have,
But,
Pete Rose or Barry Bonds? I mean, would you rather have a
oh,
guy who gets
without
a
a doubt, Barry
single
Bonds.
in every at bat, or a guy who maybe his average is probably not as high, and definitely his hits aren't as many, but he's going to hit home runs?
Yeah, definitely Barry Bonds. Although Pete Rose surprisingly had very high on base percentages.
Well, yeah, when you get 4,000 hits, you got on base a lot.
But yeah, I mean, you're talking about teams that use or didn't use sabermetrics. I mean, the Orioles certainly, they're sort of teetering on the edge. But man, I mean, they just let Mark Reynolds just walk at the end of the year. And I understand the whole contract thing, and they probably didn't want to offer him a big contract. But man, how much better would the Orioles be at this point? Right now, Baltimore is 19-13, two games behind Boston for the AL East lead. I mean, right now, I think Mark Reynolds, I don't have the stat in front of me, but he's probably worth about two wins to the Indians. Right now, the Orioles
it is.
Are first
I
place.
Did see him the other day, and he was over two wins already.
Yeah.
You know what's funny, though, is that they're having the same conversation on Dirty River Baseball over in the East Coast in Boston, and saying, how stupid are the Indians for letting Travis Hafner go? They could have had him for $2 million, and he's hitting like crazy for the Yankees. You know, I mean, so everybody...
Until he gets hurt.
Yeah, and I would much rather go with Reynolds and Hafner, even though, personally... Like Hafner better. Yeah, I will say this.
No, you have.
Last night, he hit the mammoth 466-foot home run up to left field, almost to the scoreboard. He threw the bat down, just stood there and looked at it, and walked as slow as he could about the first 10 feet. I despise that. I hate it. I don't care if it's my guy and I want him to hit the home run. I love the home run. I hate that he did that. I don't care that he almost got hit in the head. It doesn't matter. You don't do it. And that's what Milton Bradley got in trouble for. Every time he hit a home run, he would take his batting gloves off the first 10 feet and just kind of like saunter, and then he'd start running. Yeah, fuck that. Be a man. You've hit a home run before. You've hit a lot of home runs before. How about you just run the bases? The
no,
guy
he's
that,
a human
was a Jared
being.
Parker,
I mean,
he's like
I
a
mean...
two-year guy. Yeah, he's no one.
What if I almost hit you in the head? I would almost give Mark Reynolds credit for not being more animated after he got hit in the head and after he hit the home run.
He absolutely
I mean,
deserves credit.
That's called his competitiveness.
When he got hit, he didn't look to the pitcher. He just walked to first. That's what you should do.
Yeah.
Be happy. He hit you. You just got a free base. We just talked about how important on-base percentage is. He just hit you and gave you a free base. Be happy about it. Next time you came up, you hit a home run. Great. But don't tell me you did the home run just because he hit you, because if that's the case, you should be hitting a home run every single at-bat. If you can control it that much, just get angry. Just be like the water boy and think that the pitcher's got a Ku Klux Klan hat on or something like that. I don't know. You know, you should be able to hit a home run every single at-bat. If he did it intentionally, don't.
Yeah.
And I, you know what? If he had just done it that time and never done it before, I wouldn't even brought it up. But I've seen him do it at least three times this year, and I don't like it. I'm telling you, it's stupid.
No, I think
it's showboating. It's pointless.
I think you're getting emotional over nothing.
That
I
is.
I don't think he was showboating.
That's
he
my
wasn't
point.
Showboating.
He spit on the ground.
All right, and he glared at Jared Parker, who wasn't even looking back, so Jared Parker didn't even see it. All right, and he didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything out of the ordinary. And, I mean, we'll see the next couple of games whether the A's thought he did. But I mean,
that'll be interesting.
I don't think Jared Parker was throwing at him to begin with, obviously. And
well, yesterday he got hit in the first inning after back-to-back home runs, and they had warnings. Because of that, in the first inning, you got warnings that the pitchers now are supposedly afraid to throw inside. Although I think they were afraid to throw inside because the umpire was calling strikes 6 inches off the plate at points. And sometimes he was calling balls that were over the plate balls. It's really an interesting creative strike zone yesterday. So that could have explained pitching practices as much as anything.
Yeah, you know when the home plate umpire has both teams complaining, it's probably going to be a long night.
Well, you know when Matt Underwood complains that at a point, because Matt Underwood is just the happiest-go-lucky country boy you'll ever see. So if he thinks there's something wrong, there's something wrong.
Yeah. Well, we gotta wrap up this episode. I've got things to do and people to see. Actually, things to see and people to do.
See, you messed up your own time. You really are good.
Sorry, I'm just reading something. I'm reading something about Nick Swisher and his injury. I'm trying to find out more.
Okay. It'll be all irrelevant by the time people hear this.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that people will listen to this. You know, if you are listening to this, it is 2013. If you're listening to this in like 2020, on your iPod 73, and you can't find our webpage and you can't find the link. Well, it doesn't matter. You're just listening because it's entertaining anyway. So don't worry about the link earlier with the thing. If you're
Yeah.
listening in a more recent time, then you should definitely go to burningriverbaseball.com and read all the things you wrote about. I know I wrote an article about Nick Swisher's injury like last week when it first happened, and we try to stay on top of stuff like that in writing. If you read it, you're going to get the information in a much more timely manner than if you listen to it, because who knows when these things get posted.
Yeah. And if they have any questions, how do they contact us?
Oh, yeah. If you have questions or comments or whatever you want to do, you can email us at burningriverbaseball@gmail.com, or you can send me a Twitter on at BRBBLOG on Twitter. That would be it.
Oh, it sounds like we have bumper music now.
Yeah, we
That's
do. Isn't
interesting.
that cool?
Yeah.
All right. Well, say goodnight, Mickey.
Good night, Mickey.